gospel reading time this morning, passage Luke 19, first 10 verses. Please stand or take whichever posture works best for you, which is way too latitude to give me, for the reading of the gospel. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through it. A man was there named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. He was trying to see who Jesus was, but on account of the crowd, he could not, because he was short in stature. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore tree to see him, because he was going to pass that way. When Jesus came to the place, he looked up at him and said, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today." So he hurried down and was happy to welcome. All who saw it began to grumble and said, "He has gone to be the guest of one who's a sinner." Zacchaeus stood there and said to the Lord, "Look, half my possessions, Lord, I will give to the poor. And if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay back four times as much." Then Jesus said to him, "Today, salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek out and to save the lost." The word of the Lord. And we have junior worship time on here. I realize last time I tried to send people out, I said if you're like this tall, but I realize that could cover a couple people, adults in the congregation. So I will not do that. I'll just say whatever it is. You know the drill. Jesus loves me.
Good morning, friends. Good to be gathered in the space. Thanks, Shannon and worship team, for leading us in song. Thanks, Carolyn, for your prayer and allowing us a moment to remember our beloved ones. It's good. Thanks, Lori, for the welcome. You almost sang it. You didn't quite, but perhaps we'll return to that in just a moment here. Let's start with this. All who saw what Jesus did began to grumble. And what an intriguing character we receive in our gospel passage today. Apart from Jesus, of course, and maybe, say, Goliath, there may be no other person as well known among Sunday school children as the person at the center of today's lesson, Zacchaeus. Which is impressive, given that he only appears here in this one story, in this one gospel. A gospel focused on welcoming the unwelcomable. But we'll get to that in a moment. So, just what is it that every Sunday school kid knows about this man, Zacchaeus? And as Lori hinted at, we've actually put it into song, haven't we? And like Lori, I'm not going to sing it, but I wonder if you remember it. Zacchaeus was a... Was he... Yeah, oh no, that's enough. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. You know, in Scotland, they say wee for the word little. Lisa and I got over to Scotland years ago and sang this song with them. They don't use the word wee in this song. They just say little. And I thought, how bizarre is that? Anyway, the one time we say it, they don't say it. We've had occasion to talk in the past in other contexts about the interestingly, surprisingly vast number of talented, powerful, successful people in our world who also happen to be small in stature. But allow me to remind you of just a few in case you've forgotten. The rock star Prince was 5'2" tall, described as the shortest sex symbol of the 20th century, for what it's worth. Tyrone Muggsy Bogues, remember him? Former NBA star, was 5'3", and that man could dunk. How about that? Jose Altuve, currently starring for the Houston Astros in the 2022 World Series, is 5'6", the shortest player in professional baseball. Jack Ma, the richest man in China, worth over $40 billion, 5'2". Yuri Gagarin, the first human to enter outer space, also 5'2". Genghis Khan, Lord of the Mongolian Empire, remember him? 5'1". Napoleon Bonaparte, leader of the French Revolution and the Emperor of France, is the tallest on this list, coming in at 5'7". James Madison, the fourth president of the United States, 5'4". And on we could go. Of course, I suppose it is worth mentioning that all of these measurements are, of course, somewhat relative. Historians tell us that the average height in Jesus' day was somewhere around, can you guess, 5'5" tall. Meaning that this particular talented, powerful, successful man, Zacchaeus, was most likely in the 4-foot range somewhere. Zacchaeus was indeed a wee little man. Well, so much for the Sunday school song. What else do we know about this diminutive dude? Side note, did anyone else see Lincoln's shirt today? It says dude across the front of it. What an awesome shirt. I want one of those. Okay, what else do we know? What other details does Luke describe? Perhaps you'll not be surprised to hear that Zacchaeus' stature is actually the least important detail in this story. Because what proves most important for Jesus' point, not to mention Luke's entire theology, is actually not mentioned in our catchy Sunday school song that you obviously all remember. So, just what is that? What else do we even know about Zacchaeus? Again, he only occurs here. What else can we say about him? And perhaps the first and most obvious thing is we can say this. The man was a tax collector. And not just any tax collector. He is the tax collector. A chief tax collector, as Luke puts it. And it's critical to Luke's point that we understand just what that means. Here's how the IRS worked in Jesus' day. And it's nothing like what you're imagining from our day, of course. And it's critical that we understand this. Luke says he's the chief tax collector, and we just rumble on past it. But it's essential that you understand the man we're dealing with here. Here's how it worked in Jesus' day. Rome, as you know, controlled the entire Mediterranean at this time. And because of that, they demanded tribute taxes across the empire. Being Rome and being vast, they can easily collect those taxes all by themselves. They didn't need assistance with it. But every once in a while, a few entrepreneurial souls would save Rome the hassle of collecting those taxes. People like Zacchaeus. You see, what these folks would do was pay the taxes for an entire region on their own. In one simple payment, Rome would receive everything it had demanded from, say, Galilee, by a person like Zacchaeus. In exchange for saving Rome the burden of having to go out and actually collect all this money, Rome would then grant the payee the right to recoup those costs from their fellow Israelites. And by right, I mean Rome would offer them the backing of the Roman army in said collection efforts. So these enterprising Israelites, well, they were known as chief tax collectors. And their plan of action to recoup the money they've just paid to Rome, went something like this. As soon as they paid the empire in full, they would then recruit several more Israelites around them to be in charge of smaller areas throughout their region. These fellows were the regular toll collectors that we hear about in scriptures. such as Jesus' own disciple, Matthew, who was one of them. They would pay the chief tax collector the full sum for their region, say Nazareth, and once again in exchange for the right to recoup the sum from their fellow citizens. The toll collectors would set taxes for commerce, for trade, for travel, for land, etc., all with the support of the Roman military. Now, that gets a little confusing, doesn't it? I haven't even mentioned numbers, and it's still confusing. So let me say it this way. The Romans required their set amount. And see what you can see if you can understand what's happening here. The Romans would require their set amount, which the chief tax collector would pay ahead of time. He would then need to recoup his money, and he would also need to make some money. So he would then require an amount from his region, which the toll collectors would pay to him ahead of time. They would then, in turn, use that amount to determine what they needed to charge all the residents of their region to then make some money. I hope you see how this is working out. Here's the issue. As I'm sure you can imagine, this entire system was ripe for corruption, and in fact, rife with it. Since the chief tax collector and his employees made a living from this enterprise, they would necessarily charge more for the from the people downstream from them than they had to pay to the people upstream from them. It's the only way they could make any money, which meant this. The people at the bottom of the tax chain, those least able to afford it, actually ended up paying the absolute most of anybody else, more than if they had just paid Rome directly. So, no one wants to pay taxes in the first place. We still grumble about that today. But you really don't want to pay taxes to the unwelcome and unwanted foreign empire in your midst. But then you add on top of that your fellow citizens getting rich off of your financial woes. Well, those people, those fellow citizens, they're unconscionable, which is why they were so universally hated. The Israelite tax collectors were, for their neighbors, even worse than the Roman occupiers themselves. And the chief tax collector is worst of all. So, apart from our catchy Sunday school song, are you beginning to catch a glimpse of just who this man Zacchaeus really was? He is the quintessential one percenter. Before we ever used that term, he is absurdly and obscenely wealthy. Numerous people in his employ, massive amounts of money at his disposal, the backing of the most powerful political regime in the world. He's the guy who's got the numbers of the Roman senators on his cell phone. He's wealthy, he's powerful, and he is in bed with Rome. On top of all that, he's ruining the lives of everyone around him. And then Luke says this, an innocuous-sounding sentence that no doubt dumbfounded everyone in the streets that day. Jesus happens to come into Jericho, which happens to be the place that this chief collector happens to live. And Luke writes this in verse 4, Zacchaeus, because of his stature, well, Zacchaeus ran and climbed. Which, I admit, on first read, doesn't sound all that odd. Who hasn't run before? Who doesn't enjoy a good climb now and again? But in the first century, these particular activities were not only considered childish, they were considered remarkably undignified. You knew a dignified man by how slowly he was allowed to walk through the streets, never in a rush, because no one could tell him what to do. respectable adults simply did not run, ever. And they most certainly did not climb trees. Pick your favorite in your head, rich and powerful man and woman, even today, and just imagine for a moment what it would look like if they did anything like what Zacchaeus did that day. Can you imagine, say, Warren Buffett, if you know who he is, one of America's wealthiest humans, who recently increased his net worth to just over, do you know this amount? $100 billion is this man's net worth. Can you ever imagine this man running down the road and climbing a tree just to get a glimpse of, say, Walter Brueggemann, you know, a theologian and prophet, but hardly known outside of church circles? Aside from the fact that Buffett is now 92, I looked that up yesterday, sprinting is likely out of the question for him. But even if he was sprightly, the idea of it is ridiculous. He would never do that. And there's no way that man is climbing in trees with his $10,000 suits. He's got people to do that for him. And so did Zacchaeus. So when this man, Zacchaeus, of power, wealth, and influence, takes off running that day, down that road and climbs that tree, it was quite simply the most surprising thing the people of Jericho had ever seen. And very likely, the absolute most delightful. Because the despised Zacchaeus was embarrassing himself right in front of everyone. You ever watch TV and some wealthy, powerful human being is on before you and makes some wonderfully egregious flub right there on live TV? And you just sort of smile to yourself. Do you know the feeling of rejoicing in someone else's embarrassment, particularly when you know they deserve it? Be honest here. You know you do. Well, that is exactly what those folks from Jericho must have felt seeing Zacchaeus do what he did that day. How joyful it is when those who most deserve it go ahead and make fools of themselves in front of everyone. And then, to make it even better, along comes Jesus. And when he stops right under that tree, shining a spotlight up on that absurd man climbing up in that tree, caught in his remarkably embarrassing position, everyone in that town must have grinned from ear to ear. Zacchaeus had not only made his egregious flub, he's now been exposed within it. You ever have that dream? You know that one where you show up at school only to discover you've left your pants at home and all you have on is your underwear? That must have been how this man felt in that wonderfully horrible moment. What must those crowds have been thinking right then? Well, I can tell you what they were certainly not thinking. Neither the crowds, nor Zacchaeus, nor any reader of Luke's gospel ever, not one of them, was anticipating the words that actually came out of Jesus' mouth that morning. Friend, come down. I must go to your house today. Side note, in our setting, it's considered rude to invite yourself over to someone else's home. I don't typically tell Marty and Keith Leffler, hey, leave open a place setting for me. I'm going to be over later today. I usually wait for them to invite me. But in Jesus' time, it was just the opposite. Every single person in that crowd that day would have been overwhelmed with joy had Jesus asked to go stay with them. To be singled out like that by a prophet was to be honored, which is precisely why it is so horrifying to hear that that honor on this day fell to a despicable human being. And all who saw what Jesus did, Luke says in verse 7, began to grumble. And I, for one, don't blame them. There is no way this man deserves the kindness Jesus offers. Not for a second. You can almost just imagine the Twitter feeds that day. Jesus betrays the people. Hashtag traitor. Jesus just doesn't get it. Hashtag out of touch. Jesus, not who we hoped. Hashtag false prophet. All who saw it were grumbling. And since that day, and here's the point, we've never stopped. Every time we see the enemy loved, the unworthy welcomed, the horrible helped, think Sister Helen Prejean ministering to murderers on death row, we grumble. And that's probably putting it mildly. I've shared with you several details about Zacchaeus today. How about one more? Did you know that Zacchaeus, the name itself, actually means, of all things, purity? What a joke. Not a single person in Jericho would have associated that word with this man. Not one. He was, after all, the reason children didn't have food. He was, after all, the reason families didn't have homes. He was, and let's not mince words, a bastard. No one would have associated that description with this man until Jesus, who said to that brute, that beast, that demon, that devil, you are more than your mistakes. And reached out the hand of fellowship. Not, mind you, because Zacchaeus had changed at all at this point. Not because he had repented, that hadn't happened yet. Not because he had done a single thing up to that point to earn this. All he'd done is embarrass himself by running and climbing. Not because of any of that, but, as Nolan read, because he too is a child of God, like it or not. And because someone, somewhere, at some point, has got to be the first one to break the cycle of hate. And so, that's what Jesus did that day. And so, predictably, we grumbled. Reminded once again how very easy it is to celebrate Jesus and how very hard to actually act like him. Of course, this is not the only story in Scripture. And there are other times when Jesus has nothing but harsh words for deplorable behavior. But on this day, we don't receive those passages. We receive Luke 19 and Zacchaeus and an echo through the ages reminding us just what love is supposed to look like. And perhaps today we even receive a calling, you and I, to identify our own Zacchaeus, someone so utterly unworthy of our kindness, our friendship, our fellowship, that we grumble every time we even speak their name. And then, though they certainly don't deserve it, we do what Jesus did anyway. Not because they've earned it, but because we carry the name around of the one who loved the unlovable. How easy it is to celebrate Jesus. How very hard to actually act like him. Perhaps you and I could change that today. Amen.